In the morning, he doesn't wear anything when it's cold, and in the evening, he wears a jacket.
Hare Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Sometimes Prabhupada would walk in Riverside Park. Still careful for the condition of his heart, he liked the long stretches of flat walking area. Sometimes he would walk from Dr. Mishra's studio down 72nd Street to Amsterdam Avenue, to the West End Superette, where he would buy produce and spices for his cooking. Sometimes he would wander through Manhattan without any fixed direction, and sometimes he would take buses to different areas of the city. On weekends, Prabhupada would accompany Dr. Mishra to his Ananda Ashram, 1 hour north of the city in Monroe, New York. Joan Suval, who used to drive them, would overhear their animated conversations in the back seat of the car, of her car. Although they spoke in Hindi, she could hear their discussions turn into loud, shouting arguments, and afterwards they would again become friends, right? Because they're shouting about, you know, Mayavad. At Ananda Ashram, Prabhupada would usually hold kirtan, with Dr. Mishra's students joining him in the chanting, and even in dancing. Dr. Mishra was particularly fond of Prabhupada's chanting, Ramamurti Mishra. I have never seen or met any devotee who sang so much, and his kirtan was just ambrosial. What's ambrosial?
Nectar.
Yes, like nectar. If you pay attention and become relaxed, that voice was has very electrical vibrations on your heart. You cannot avoid it. 99% of the students, whether they liked it or not, got up and danced and chanted. I felt very blessed to meet such a great soul. Harvey Cohen, a visitor to Ananda Ashram. Everyone got up early and went to morning meditation. Dr. Mishra was dressed in a golden Indian-style jacket, and his students were already deeply into it. I guess that's meditation. When I entered the room, all the cushions were taken, so I picked a spot in the back of the room where I could lean against the wall to facilitate my meditation. Seated at one side was an older Indian man in saffron cloth and wrapped in a pinkish wool blanket. He seemed to be murmuring to himself, and I later discovered that he was praying. It was Swami Bhaktivedanta. His forehead was painted with a white V-shaped sign, and his eyes were half shut. He seemed very serene. Harvey tried, but he couldn't do the Raja Yoga. He was new to Ananda Ashram, and he had only come up for a weekend retreat. During his morning meditation, he found himself more attracted to the green mists above the lake outside the window than to the circle on the wall he was supposed to be meditating upon. Harvey. I went to my room. The rain was increasing and beating against the windows. It was peaceful, and I was glad to be alone. I read for a while. Suddenly, I sensed someone standing in the doorway. Looking up, I saw it was the Swami. He was wrapped in his pink blanket, like a shawl. Can I come in? He asked. I nodded yes. And he asked if he could sit in the chair in the corner. What are you reading? He smiled. Kafka's Diaries, I replied, feeling a little embarrassed. He said. And I put down the book. He asked what I was doing at the ashram and if I was interested in yoga. What kind of yoga are you studying? I don't know much about it, I answered. But I think I'd like to study Hatha Yoga. This didn't impress him. There are better things than this, he explained. There are higher, more direct forms of yoga. Bhakti Yoga is the highest. It is the science of devotion to God. As he spoke, I got the overpowering realization that he was right. He was speaking the truth. A creepy, ecstatic sensation came over me that this man was my teacher. His words were so simple, and I kept looking at him all weekend. He would sit so calm and dignified with warmth, and he asked me to visit him when we got back to the city. Because he means you have your different yogas. Yoga means to connect, to link. So its purpose is to link with the Supreme Lord. But what happens is that most of these processes one, even if you can link to the Supreme Lord through them, you use it that way, it's very slow, right? Extremely slow. And because they're distracted by so many other lower elements, you know, physical elements, intellectual, emotional, all these different kinds of things. But while the devotional service, while engaging the intelligence, the mind, and the body, it's not distracted by them. So it's a much higher form, much quicker form. So in devotional service, you can get things done so much quicker that you can't get done in these others. Like, you know, by meditation, those who are actually successful, that they see the Lord in the heart, you know, directly, then, you know, that's 10 to 60,000 years. You know, so that's, it's not so efficient, you know. So we see here, but bhakti yoga, you know, in one lifetime, it's so powerful because of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Because you're directly dealing with the Lord in devotion. So it's not a matter of perfection of mechanics. It's a matter of actually just correcting the mood. Right? Does that make sense? Just like this. Somebody wants to be your friend. What are you more impressed by? Just a very nice, relaxed mood that you interact, or mechanics? Right? They mechanically go through all the motions, do all the right things. Which of those two are you going to pick as a friend?
The first one.
Hmm? The first one. The first one. Which was?
It's natural.
Natural. You understand? So, therefore, as someone who has that natural mood or that devotion towards Krishna, very quickly he comes to that platform. Right? By Krishna's grace. And those who want to go through the mechanics because they're attracted to, you know, the postures or breathing exercises of yoga or the intellectualizing of jnana. Does that make sense? Or the fruitive, engaging in the fruitive or ritualistic aspects of karma. Then all these things make it very difficult. Does that make sense? Yeah? They make it very slow because they're distractions. You're more interested in that than in the actual person that you're trying to connect with. Or they're so ignorant they don't even know they're supposed to connect with the Lord. Right? They just don't know. Does this make sense? Yeah? So Prabhupada's pointing out is if you're interested in yoga, fine. But this yoga is higher. It's more efficient. Right? Because there it's like, yes.
What's Hatha Yoga?
Hatha Yoga. Hatha Yoga is where you deal with the first basically four, well, first three mainly. Sometimes four aspects of the Ashtanga yoga system. Ashtanga is eight levels. So when you just do the yama niyama, or you have some things you should do and shouldn't do, and then the yoga asans, you know, all the different pretzel shapes and all that, then that's Hatha yoga. Though some will put into it also the pranayama. You know, the breathing exercise, but then technically it becomes Kriya Yoga. You know, when there's more emphasis on the breathing and those things, then it's Kriya Yoga. But if more emphasis on the asanas, then it's Hatha Yoga. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. Anything else? No? Yes? No? Dr. Misra would give lectures carrying the impersonal interpretation of Bhagavad Gita, according to Shankara, and Prabhupada, when allowed to speak, would counter them. Once Prabhupada asked Dr. Misra to help him in spreading Lord Chaitanya's movement, but Dr. Misra sidestepped Prabhupada by saying he considered Prabhupada an incarnation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and therefore not in need of help. Right. Mayavadis use their own philosophy to their advantage, right? Prabhupada replied that since Misra was also the name of Lord Chaitanya's father, Dr. Misra should help spread Lord Chaitanya's movement, right? So they both have their own interesting contents. Yeah, but you have the same family name. You should be doing the family business. Srila Prabhupada offered to engage him in checking the Sanskrit to his translations of Srimad Bhagavatam. But Dr. Misra declined, a decision he later regretted. Yeah, because they probably just thought, okay, he's an old man, he's there for a little while, and then he'll go away. Didn't understand that Dr. Misra would have his little yoga studio and come back 20 later years later. He still has a little yoga studio, and Prabhupada has an international society. So another person talking. This is a name. Hurt Lurch. Okay, a student at Ananda Ashram. My direct encounter with him was in the kitchen. He was very particular and very definite that he would only eat what he cooked himself. He would come and say, "Get me a pot." So when I brought him a pot, he'd say, "No, bigger." So I brought a bigger pot, and he'd say, "No, smaller." Then he would say, "Get me potato." So I'd bring him a potato. He prepared food very, very quietly. He never spoke very much. He prepared potatoes, and then some vegetables, and then chapatis. After cooking, he would eat outside. He would usually cook enough to go around for Dr. Misra and about 5 or 6 other people. Every day he would cook that much when he was there. I learned to make chapatis from him. He usually stayed only for the weekends and then went back to the city. I think he felt that was where his main work was to be done. That was certainly true. But what could he do there with no money or support? He was thinking of staying for only a few weeks and then going back to India. In the meantime, he was working on his Srimad Bhagavatam manuscripts, walking in Manhattan and writing letters. He was studying a new culture, calculating practically and imagining, hopefully, how to introduce Krishna consciousness to the Western world. He expressed his thoughts to Sumati Murarji, October 27th. So far as I have studied, the American people are very much eager to learn about the Indian way of spiritual realization. And there are so many so-called yoga ashrams in America. Unfortunately, they are not very much adored by the government. And it is learned that such yoga ashrams have exploited the innocent people, as has been the case in India also. The only hope is that they are spiritually inclined. An immense benefit can be done to them if the cult of Srimad Bhagavatam is preached here. Right, so Prabhupada would go around and observe things. Like when he'd go around his walks, it wasn't just, means he was getting exercise, you know, so it was good for his health. But he was observing what people were doing, how they were doing, what was valuable, what is being advertised, what is in their shops, how people interact with each other. You know, just noting all these things. So, and then going to the ashram, what's their mood, their inclination. And so in this way, he starts to figure out how can he preach in this situation, how to preach to these people. Right, so he gets to know where they're at, but not by becoming one of them, but by just observing. Right? By seeing, you can catch so many things. Srila Prabhupada noted that the Americans were also giving a good reception to Indian art and music. Quote, "Just to see the mode of reception, he attended the performance of a Madrasi dancer, Bala Saraswati." So this is continuing the letter. "I went to see the dance with a friend, although for the last 40 years I have never attended such dance ceremonies. The dancer was successful in her demonstration. The music was an Indian classical tune, mostly in Sanskrit language, and the American public appreciated them. So I was encouraged to see the favorable circumstances about my future preaching work." Right, so he's identifying very much with it. Where he says successful in a demonstration means the formulas that were used, you know, for, you know, what are the different parts of the dance performance, everything was there, each one of them was done correctly. And so then for Prabhupada to say that, then means he also had to know something about it. You know, he had to actually know what is the proper thing, what is the proper standard. He said the Bhagavatam could also be preached through music and dance, but he had no means to introduce it. The Krishna missionaries, backed by huge resources, were preaching all over the world. So why couldn't the devotees of Krishna combine to preach the Bhagavatam all over the world? He also noted that the Krishna missions had not been effective in checking the spread of communism, whereas a Bhagavatam movement could be. because of its philosophical scientific approach. He was deliberately planting a seed of inspiration in the mind of the devoted, wealthy Srimati Maharaji. Right? So he's seeing all these things in America, and he's just seeing as how to preach, what are opportunities. Now, it's not just a dance performance and that's all. He's seeing that here, these people then they appreciate, they can't understand Sanskrit. They've never really been exposed to the Indian music, classical music, but they're appreciating. Right, so they're appreciating all these things. So he says, yes, so there is an interest in the Indian culture. So he could present in that way. Right? Because the Vyasadeva writes in Bhagavatam, there's a cultural revolution. Right? Why cultural? I would say culture. We hand out prasadam yogurt or something, and that makes it cultural or something. Not sure.
Because culture can change the mood of the people.
Culture changes the mood. Also, it's that someone whose mood is changed then will follow a particular culture. Right? That makes sense. So, culture is what you practically apply in your life. It means you have philosophy, but that philosophy has to apply. Just like we are servants of the Lord, so we should not be proud. We should be humble. Okay, that's philosophy. That's our position. That's who we are. Okay, but how do you apply that? How do you apply humility? You know, we just, you know, crawl around on the ground like a lizard or something like that, so that we never look, very proud and upstanding. So we always grovel. So you could also roll on the ground if you wanted. That would also. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole point. Is that. It has to be applied. Therefore, there's a way that you exhibit this humility, you know, in service, in not trying to control the situation for one's own purposes, you know, in the gentleness of speech, respect for others, you know, and how you interact. Understand? So it's culture. So you have philosophy, it must be applied. So that's the culture. So since they're interested in Indian culture, they'll be interested in this interaction. Right? So through the Indian culture, you will be able to create, to generate an interest in the whole process. That makes sense? Yeah. You doing Udiyan Banda or something? You know, Udiyan Banda, it's a very advanced technique in pranayama where you close the breathing here, so you're holding the life airs inside so you can get control. So you put the head down like this. The closer the chin gets to the breastbone, the better. So that can also be practiced by, Sarvangasan, you know, where you are upside down with your feet up on your shoulders, so that presses the head against that. So it gets very tight, and then you can hold the light. You breathe in, and then hold, and so it doesn't come out like that. So it seems that we have a few yogis, we're, you know, discussing Dr. Misra, so practicing their yoga and all that. Something like that? Yeah? You know, that yoga, that connecting with the Supreme, you know. The Supreme, because God is everything, so all He is also, you know, that state of, what do you call it? Dreamless sleep, you know, so connecting with the Lord in this medium. Yeah? That makes sense? You know what I'm talking about? Okay. Okay. November 8th. Prabhupada wrote to his godbrother Tirtha Maharaj, who had become president of the Gaudiya Math, to remind him that their spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, had a strong desire to open preaching centers in the Western countries. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had several times attempted to do this by sending sannyasis to England and other European countries. But Prabhupada noted, quote, without any tangible results, right? It means nothing really happened. From the letter. I have come to this country. Could we not Te Re Ketav? Here, thank you. I have come to this country with the same purpose in view, and as far as I can see, here in America, there is very good scope for preaching the cult of Lord Chaitanya. Prabhupada pointed out that there were certain Mayavadi groups who had buildings but were not attracting many followers. But he had talked with Swami Nikhilananda of the Ramakrishna Mission, who had given the opinion that the Americans were suitable for bhakti yoga. From the letter, I am here and see a good field for work, but I am alone, without men and money. To start a center here, we must have our own buildings. If the leaders of the Gaudiya Mutt would consider opening their own branch in New York, Srila Prabhupada would be willing to manage it. But without their own house, he reported, they could not conduct a mission in the city. Srila Prabhupada wrote that they could open centers in many cities throughout the country if his godbrothers would cooperate. He repeatedly made the point that although other groups did not have the genuine spiritual philosophy of India, they were buying many buildings. The Gaudiya Mutt, however, had nothing. From the letter, if you agree to cooperate with me as I have suggested above, then I shall extend my visa period. My present visa period ends by the end of this November. But if I receive your confirmation immediately, then I shall extend my visa period. Otherwise, I shall return to India. November 9th, 6 p.m. While Srila Prabhupada sat alone in his fifth floor room in Dr. Mistra's yoga studio, the lights suddenly went out. This was his experience of the first moments of the New York City blackout in 1965. Yeah, that was a big... I think there's been two or three blackouts like this. Very disastrous day. I think the last one, they lost like billions of dollars of goods. The lights go off for a half hour, then everyone just goes through and breaks everything and steals everything. So, you know, America is supposed to be civilized, right? So. In India, power failure occurred commonly, so Prabhupada, while surprised to find the same thing in America, remained undisturbed. He began chanting the Hare Krishna mantra on his beads. Meanwhile, outside his room, the entire New York metropolitan area had been plunged into darkness. The massive power failure had suddenly left the entire city without electricity, trapping 800,000 people in the subways and affecting more than 30 million people in 9 states and 3 Canadian provinces. Wow, that's a big one. 800,000 people are stuck in the subways. Now that would be annoying. You know, and then they don't even list how many are in elevators, right? But probably not that many. 2 hours later, a man from Dr. Mistra's apartment arrived at the door with candles and some fruit. He found Prabhupada in a pleasant mood, sitting there in the darkness chanting Hare Krishna. The man informed him of the serious nature of such a blackout in New York City. Prabhupada thanked him and returned again to his chanting. The blackout lasted until 7 the next morning. Oh, so this is the major, big one. The one I'm thinking about is, it was only half hour, and they lost billions. God only knows what happened here, right? Srila Prabhupada received a reply to his letter of November 8th to Tirtha Maharaj in Calcutta. Prabhupada explained his hopes and plans for staying in America, but he had stressed that his godbrothers would have to give him their vote of confidence as well as some tangible support. His godbrothers had not been working cooperatively. Each leader was interested more in maintaining his own building than in working with the others to spread the teachings of Lord Chaitanya around the world. So how would it be possible for them to share Srila Prabhupada's vision of establishing a branch in New York City? They would see it as a separate attempt. Yet despite the unlikely odds, he appealed to their missionary spirit and reminded them of the desires of their spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. The Guru Maharaj wanted Krishna consciousness to be spread in the West, but when Prabhupada finally got Tirtha Maharaj's reply, he found it unfavorable. His godbrother did not argue against his attempting something in New York, but he politely said that the Gaudiya Mutt funds could not be used for such a proposal. Now, even though Prabhupada knew there's very slim chance, because they're supposed to be working together as one group, But they're each just having their own branches, doing their own thing. So then, but he still tried. It's an option, so he tried it. And then only if it's not going to work, then, he'll try something else. Does that make sense? So it's not a matter, oh, that won't work. If there's any possibility, then he tried. Right? No possibility, then of course. Prabhupada replied, "It is not very encouraging. Still, I am not a man to be disappointed." End quote. In fact, he found a little hope in Tirtha Maharaj's reply. So he described to his godbrother the property he had recently found for sale at 143 West 72nd Street. The building, only 18 and a half feet wide. It's basically about, this from these column to column. That wide. 100 feet deep. Wow. It's like this wide and would be almost a little less than twice as, it's basically from here to the back of the building, that double. That would be the building. Consisted of the first floor store, a basement, and a mezzanine. Right? So it means three floors, basically. Prabhupada presented Tirtha Maharaj the price, $100,000, with a $20,000 cash down payment, and remarked that this building was twice the size of their research institute in Calcutta. Prabhupada conceived of the basement as a kitchen and dining area, the first floor as the lecture hall, and the mezzanine as personal apartments, with a separate area for the deity of Lord Krishna. Appropriately, Prabhupada had described himself as, quote, a man not to be disappointed. He was convinced that if there were a center where people could come hear from a pure devotee, the genuine God-conscious culture of India could begin in America. Yet, because he had made his plans dependent on obtaining an expensive building in Manhattan, his goal seemed unreachable. Still, he was persistently writing to prominent devotees in India, though they were not interested in his plans. Why should they not help, he thought. After all, they were devotees of Krishna. Shouldn't the devotees come forward to establish the first Krishna temple in America? Certainly he was qualified and authorized to spread the message of Krishna. As for the place, New York was perhaps the most cosmopolitan city in the world. Was cosmopolitan. Right? Something like Neapolitan? No? Neapolitan, vanilla, chocolate, strawberry, all in one box. Right? So cosmopolitan means so many different people from so many different backgrounds and cultures and everything like that. So it's a real mix of many, many, many kinds of people. Kind of like this. This is fairly cosmopolitan. But then one might consider that generally cosmopolitan also infers, more sophisticated, like city people rather than different varieties and species of monsters and other such, entities. So this might be considered more. The question would this be considered cosmopolitan or more like a zoo, like that? Because you have many different varieties in a zoo also. What is your opinion? No opinion.
Okay.
Yes?
Maybe
Monsterpolitan. I see, okay, yes, could be. Varieties of monsters. He had found a building, not very expensive, a good location, and there was a great need for a Krishna temple here to offset the propaganda of the Indian Mayavadis. The Krishna Bhaktas to whom he was writing understood Lord Krishna to be not simply a Hindu deity, but the Supreme Lord, worshipable for the whole world. So they should be pleased to see Krishna worshipped in New York. Krishna himself said in the Bhagavad Gita, quote, "Give up all other duties and surrender to me." So if they were Krishna's devotees, why would they not help? What kind of devotee was it who did not want to glorify the Lord? But Srila Prabhupada did not judge beforehand who would serve Krishna's mission and who would not. He was fully surrendered and fully dependent on Krishna. And in obedience to his spiritual master, he would approach everyone without discrimination to ask for help. There was Sumati Murarji. She had helped him in publishing the Bhagavatam, and she had sent him to America. In a recent letter to her, he had only given hints from the letter. I am just giving you the idea, and if you kindly think over the matter seriously and consult your beloved Lord Balakrishna, surely you will be further enlightened in the matter. Here, there is scope, and there is certainly necessity also. And it is the duty of every Indian, especially the devotees of Lord Krishna, to take up the matter. But he had received no reply. He had not heard from her since Butler, though her words to him had seemed prophetic, and they had stuck with him. Quote, I feel that you should stay there until you fully recover from your illness and return only after you have completed your mission. Now Sumati Murarji must do something big. He told her point blank. What's point blank? Bluntly, yeah, very directly. Point blank. You know, point blank means it's just right next to each other. Right? You know. So. I think, therefore, that, and then underlined, a temple of Balakrishna in New York may immediately be started for this purpose. And as a devotee of Lord Balakrishna, you should execute this great and noble work. Till now, there is no worshipable deity of the Hindus in New York, though in India there are so many American missionary establishments and churches. So I shall request you to do this noble act, and it will be recorded in the history of the world that the first Hindu temple was started by a pious Hindu lady, then in capital letters underlined, Srimati Sumati Murarji, who is not only a big business magnate in India, but a pious Hindu lady and a great devotee of Lord Krishna. This task is for you and glorious at the same time. He assured her that he had no ambition to become the proprietor of a house or a temple in America, but for preaching a building would be absolutely required from the letter. They should have association of bona fide devotees of the Lord. They should join the kirtan glorifying the Lord. They should hear the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam. They should have intimate touch with the temple or place of the Lord. And they should be given ample chance to worship the Lord in the temple. Under the guidance of the bona fide devotee, they can be given such facilities. And the way of Srimad Bhagavatam is open for everyone. He informed her that he had located a building, quote, just suitable for this great missionary work. It was ideal, quote, as if it was built for this purpose only. Continuing from the letter. And your simple willingness to do the act will complete everything smoothly. The house is practically three stories, ground floor, basement, and two stories up, with all suitable arrangements for gas, heat, etc. The ground floor may be utilized for preparation of prasadam of Balakrishna, because the preaching center will not be for dry speculation, but for actual gain, for delicious prasadam. I have already tested how the people here like the vegetable prasadam prepared by me. They will forget meat eating and pay for the expenses. So food is very, very important in the preaching movement. We see Chaitanya Charitamrita that when it came to Lord Chaitanya taking prasad, he didn't just say yes and then he took his lunch and like that. He would actually go into detail the preparations. Right? And so here you have great devotees cooking for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So generally the list is quite big. You know, it's not just four or five preparations, but like 20, 30 preparations. And he gives detail exactly what they are with their names. He didn't just say, yeah, some rice, some dal, some vegetable. He'll give exact details of what was cooked, and sometimes even some detail on the recipe. Right? So this whole, you can see it's a very important element. So Prabhupada's bringing it out that prasadam is very, very important. People should know this is spiritual food. They take this and then they'll be benefited. So Prabhupada would call this a kitchen religion. Right? So it's so much of the movement is based around the kitchen. Right? Yes. Now, why would this be a good approach?
Because everybody likes to eat.
Yes. You were going to say?
Everybody has to eat.
Everybody has to eat. I see. The skinny one says everyone likes to eat, and the fatter one says everyone has to eat. So I'm not quite sure. Are they just being politically correct here, or just saying what they think they should say? Or, and what does the man with the floppy hat say?
I agree with both.
You agree with both. You say they should and must eat. Okay, very good. So that's the one thing is common with every living entity is they have to eat and they like to eat. Does that make sense? Especially, so you see Prabhupada said delicious prasadam, right? He didn't say healthy prasadam. He didn't say, austere prasadam. So many things he didn't say, he said delicious. So that means it should look nice, the fragrance should be nice, the taste should be nice, like that. Does that make sense? So that's the consideration. And if that's done properly, by foods, authorized foods, and mode of goodness and that, then it will be healthy. Right? Because the main thing is the spiritual health. Does that make sense? So if you take regulated food in a regulated way, then you'll always be healthy. Right? So the expert can take food and make it very nice, very palatable, looks very nice, very sattvic. You have a very nice full flavor, and it can be very subtle. Yes? What do you think?
Yes?
Yes? Yes what?
That one you just said.
That? That one just said.
That
one thing.
That what you just said.
That what I just said. Clever answer. Okay. If we asked, we wouldn't have a clue what I said, but he agrees with it. Yes, whatever you said. Okay. American people are not poor. Poor men like the Indians. And if they appreciate a thing, they are prepared to spend any amount on such hobby. Right? They are being exploited simply by jugglery of words and bodily gymnastics. Right? So what's the bodily gymnastics? Hatha yoga, yeah. And the jugglery of words?
Mayavad.
The Mayavad philosophy. So he's seeing Dr. Misra running this studio. They'll spend all kinds of money because it's always a hobby. Right? They're doing whatever work they have to do, but they always want to spend it on some hobby, something interesting, something to do, like that. They are being exploited simply by jugglery of words and bodily gymnastics, and still they are spending for that. But when they will have the actual commodity and feel pleasure by eating very delicious prasadam, a Balakrishna, I am sure a unique thing will be introduced in America. Right, so here he's putting more emphasis on hearing the philosophy and taking prasad. Right? Hearing the philosophy, hearing the kirtan, and taking prasad. That's the main process. Prabhupada said chanting, dancing, taking prasad. This is our process. Right? So he puts the emphasis on this. Right? And not on the all yoga asans or this or that. The main thing is hear the philosophy, chant Hare Krishna, take prasadam. And then in the process, then help others to do the same. Right? Yes.
Now we're seeing the movement that it's become very popular to
start yoga centers and to teach yoga. And then in doing that, then they hope that, you know, through the subtleties or through the invocation, and as they become more and more interested, they'll introduce them, you know, to the mantra and to prasad and so on and so forth.
Yes.
But we see that wasn't exactly a focus of Prabhupada. How is it that we've come to that point, and is it okay?
Okay, how do we come to the point? Are we running yoga studios and teaching yoga and with the hope that people will get interested and take up some Krishna consciousness? But we see is like here, Prabhupada's starting with that, but that's not his main focus. So is that okay? Is it not? What's the thing? If, it means the thing is yoga is such that the language is common. Yoga is yoga, so there's just different aspects of it, but the core is exactly the same. So the Vedanta philosophy is the core of all other systems of philosophy. So you can easily explain our philosophy, just keeping it more to the technicalities, and just very straight preach Krishna consciousness. This idea that you have to hide it and cloak it and just bring it out. No, you just very directly preach Krishna consciousness, but you're preaching to people interested in yoga, so you use yoga language. But you're directly talking about, you know, the Lord and about the process and devotion and how devotion is the higher process of all the yoga process, what yoga is. People don't know what yoga is. Yoga means hatha yoga. They don't even actually know it means yama and niyama also. All they know is it's exercises. And you do a little breathing, you do a little meditation, you try to be a little sattvic, that's their yama niyama, you know. Don't be angry all the time, and, you know, eat a better diet, and you know, a few things like that. So it's if it's as a means, as one of the ways of trying to catch attention of people, it would be fine. Because there's a whole group of persons, especially, in, generally it's more intelligent persons, they go to the yoga studios, so it's not a bad place to start. But much of the time is they don't actually preach straight Krishna consciousness, right? But you can do that. We see the acharyas then explain yoga in connection with it. So it can be easily done because all the aspects of the Ashtanga yoga system are all already there in our system. The Ashtanga yoga system is following those eight principles, but through a mechanical, physical process. Well, we follow that through less mechanical and more, you know, it's more the emphasis on the devotion, but it engages the intelligence and the senses and the emotions, which the Ashtanga yoga system can't. And then because of that, then it won't be as effective. So, but our system would be much more effective. So not only is that they're doing these things, but you're teaching something higher. So if it's seen like that, then it could be very dynamic preaching. Very direct, very dynamic, but you'd have to be able to teach people how to use it in their life, how they're already living. Right? That would be the basic thing, is you're dealing with professional people. It's teach them how to make their professional life Krishna conscious. Then from there, they'll naturally get involved and, you know, come to the, you know, programs and festivals and things like that. And then, according to the individual, they may become more and more involved or not. But in any case, you can easily teach them how, in their life and the situation there are, they can be directly Krishna conscious in all aspects. But generally, that means you actually have to know technically a lot of philosophy.
Yeah.
And generally, that doesn't seem to be the approach. You're trying to do it through sentiment and like that. You just have to present the technical philosophy through a soft vocabulary. Yeah, soft mood, soft vocabulary, that's all.
Because the result, you see, I mean, I couldn't say all, but many, they, you know, go to either veganism or kind of, they, bhakti yoga means kirtan, you know, let's say, okay, we're doing a bhakti yoga session today.
Yeah,
you know,
it's just the kirtan, it's not a lifestyle. They're not teaching lifestyle, but yoga means a lifestyle. Because Ashtanga yoga means what you're doing 24 hours a day. You know, how they're getting up, how they're bathing, how they're, you know. keeping themselves pure and uplifting and all the different sadhana, and then purifying the mind and focusing the mind and meditating on, that's all they do. They don't do anything else. So it's a lifestyle, but it's missed. And so what happens is you, the devotees may take up the new age lifestyle and then try to add Krishna consciousness to that. But what is missed is that new age comes from Krishna consciousness. You know, thinking is, oh, it's something new and different. No, it's the same old thing. People have been doing new age in India since time immemorial. You know, you add, you know, a little yoga, a little kundalini, a little, you know, chakras, a little breathing, a little, you know, trying to be peaceful and not angry. Yeah, I mean, it's just this, you know, it's all Bhagavad Gita, that's all it talks about, is this stuff. So, I mean, it's already describing so many yoga systems, you know, karma yoga, jnana yoga, and astanga yoga. It's kind of like, well, what's left? What yoga system is not discussed in Gita? So very easily they can make a study of Gita and present it practically for the people who are coming. But, you know, it's either they don't know or are embarrassed, or it's a means of making money or something, and so it doesn't happen as actual direct preaching, which it could easily be, easily. Like that. Because you have to educate the people. The problem is they just want the people to accept. You're not educating them, because educating them means, what is it called? I forget who it is, but some, oh, I think it's Ruskin. Some, you know, quotable, you know, personality. So he said education is not teaching something that a person doesn't know. It's teaching them to do what they don't do. Right? In other words, it's not just giving them knowledge, but it's getting to live that knowledge. That's education. So the point is, you go in there and say a few this and that, a few, that's nice. But to actually get them to live the lifestyle you're talking about, that's important. Like that. But then you would have to study properly the yoga and see the connection between the Astanga and the Vedanta. And one would see as Vedanta is much more fine in it. I mean, the points that are made that are technical in yoga are already in Vedanta. And so yoga addresses it very nicely. So that will be the presentation. But it's all part of the Vedantic system. Does that make sense? Yeah. I guess we should have a course on, you know, yoga preaching or something.
Yeah, it's very big.
Because it could easily be done. It's just a matter of knowing our own philosophy. That's all. Yes? No? Maybe?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhakti ki,
Jai
Nitai Gaura Premanandi.